Wisconsin is home to 236 charter schools operating in the current school year. Data there from the State Department of Public Instruction. We're discussing the role of these schools in public education in our state on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. There were nearly 51,000 students enrolled in a charter school in Wisconsin for the 2020 to 2021 school year. Did you send your child to a charter school in the pandemic? Do they attend now? What is your experience like? 800-642-1234. Sarah Hackett is director of the Wisconsin Resource Center for Charter Schools. It's based in Tomahawk. Sarah, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Kate. Thank you so much for having me and making this time for learning about charter schools this hour.
Well, good morning. So attendance at our state's charter schools, it's been growing steadily since 2017. What do you make of that growth, and especially in light of the pandemic?
Yes. So it has been growing steadily since 2017, and sort of just a general uptick, you know, over the past decades as we've had charter school law, it tends to jump a little bit more when Wisconsin has a federal grant to support the implementation and expansion of charter schools, which we did get starting in 2018. So we're in the fifth year now of implementing and expanding charter schools using those federal funds. So that's definitely been helpful in expanding some more opportunities for kids. But in addition to that, we are seeing increases in enrollment at the existing schools. And in particular, because of COVID, as you mentioned, we've seen a big uptick in enrollments at the virtual charter schools specifically.
Yes, that would make sense there when students were doing the online virtual learning during the really bad points in the pandemic. So, you know, there is some confusion over what is a charter school. Can you clarify that definition for us?
Absolutely. So a charter school is part of the public school system in our state. It's written in the statutes as a way to create a really specifically designed school based in a community need. And so it's an opportunity for school districts or communities to assess what their needs are. How could we serve our students better? What's something that's an asset that's going underutilized, or an opportunity to do something different to reach all the kids, to reach some kids who maybe aren't engaged in the traditional model of the community schools? Or, you know, is there a way that we could just engage more community members in our school system? So there's all kinds of different needs. So you design the school in the public system around this really specific focus rooted in a need, and then it's held accountable to rigid performance measures by the school district or by the university authorizer to just say, okay, here's what we're going to do, and then here's how we're going to show that that's successful and that we truly are delivering on the model and we're meeting the need and showing you the data. And so it's continuously assessed based back to that need and mission.
I want to pause there on that accountability piece, because Wisconsin's DPI interprets the Wisconsin charter school law that it gives charter schools that freedom from most state rules and regulations in exchange, as you say there, for greater accountability for results. And they cite this motto of autonomy for accountability. Do you feel that agreement, if you will, that pact is holding true and is strong in Wisconsin, that exchange is working?
Yeah, I like that phrase, autonomy for accountability, certainly. And we do see that happening. I would say that charter schools, I want to clarify, are public schools. And so they're held to all of the same state, you know, sort of testing requirements. They can be identified if they're underperforming. They will receive all the same services as other public schools. They provide all the same services in terms of special education, and they can provide transportation and food and, you know, everything that that the traditional public schools provide. Where they have that flexibility is in just the statutes 115 to 121, where they can choose specific things like flexibility around schedule, flexibility around curriculum materials, flexibility around location or staffing, just things that they would basically, you know, strategically say, in order to accomplish our model of, you know, having our school out in the forest the majority of the day, we're not going to abide by the district's bell schedule, for instance, because our children are sitting with the trees. So, like, you know, there's just some really logistical waivers that the schools tend to seek in order to carry out their specific design. Mm-hmm. And then in exchange, they typically say, we will meet all of the same academic, financial, and operational performance measures that the traditional district schools are meeting, and we'll show you some additional data that proves that our model is being carried out successfully.
We're talking with Sarah Hackett, who directs the Wisconsin Resource Center for Charter Schools. You can join in. Is there a charter school in your neighborhood? What effects do you think it has had on the public school system? Do you or your child attend a charter? How does it differ from traditional public schools? 800-642-1234. I want to look at the parental input piece because a new Marquette Law School poll yesterday found a really stark partisan divide in views about who should be guiding public school curriculum. A majority of Wisconsin Republican voters say it's parents. Majority of Democratic voters in the state say teachers. So how do charter schools consider teachers or consider parents in setting curriculum?
That's great. Thank you for making that connection. So charter schools are governed by a local governance board, which is typically made up of community members, parents, and then at times some school staff. And certainly school staff sit in as non-voting members, essentially always. And so that governance board is a nonprofit entity that's held to all the state's open meeting laws and open records request laws, and they post minutes, and they, you know, have open meetings that the public can come to. And so those governance boards are the ones doing the design, ensuring that the performance measures are being met, and then reporting back to that public authorizer, which is either in Wisconsin, it's often the school district board, but it also could be our public university boards. And so in bringing in the voice of parents and the voice of teachers, that governance board is really made up of those individuals. And so they do make a lot of those mission and vision type decisions. Then they hire the right leaders to really carry that out. And so when you come to those sort of micro decisions around curriculum, it would be a discussion between the school leader and the governance board on how to sort of choose and implement specific curriculum choices that fit with the mission and vision of the school, and then reporting all that back to the authorizer, who ultimately sort of signs off on the big picture instructional model, you know, such as we're going to do Montessori or we're going to do STEM, but they wouldn't necessarily get in the weeds as much as the governance board and school leader would, unless there's some kind of accountability issue that they feel isn't being addressed properly through the implementation, and then they could make a corrective action suggestion.
Well, Sarah, thank you for the explanations and thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. And I look forward to your next few guests who are really going to dig into some great examples of how this works.
Sarah Hackett, director of the Wisconsin Resource Center for Charter Schools. And coming up, as Sarah mentioned, we check in on charter school leaders around the state, starting in Milwaukee. What questions do you have about how charter schools operate? Would you work for one or send your child to one? 800-642-1234. Back in a moment. More conversation here on the Ideas Network. Wisconsin has more than 200 charter schools. We're going around the state to learn about a few of them here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Does your child struggle in a traditional school setting? Is there a charter operating near you? What effect do you think it has on your public school system? 800-642-1234. Rodney Link Jr. is CEO of Milwaukee Excellence Charter School, enrolling 6th through 12th graders with about 700 students. Rodney, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you for having us.
Good morning. So Milwaukee Excellence was founded in 2016, initially serving 6th graders. Can you explain the mission of your school?
Yeah, we initially were serving 6th graders, and we want to be 6 through 12 for our schools. And our mission is to provide a high-quality education to all students that give them options for choices after graduation that will do two things, Kate. One, provide financial stability, and two, personal freedom. We also want to ensure that we instill our first values, which is focus, integrity, respect, self-determination, and team. So that's our mission that we fight hard for every day.
How do you differ from a public school setting in Milwaukee? Can you contrast that?
Yeah, so one thing I want to let you know is start with some of the similarities. We are held accountable. We are a public charter school, which is different than, you know, other places such as private or choice. As a public charter school, we are still held accountable to the same standards, to the same regulations from the Department of Public Instruction. So we have to have licensed teachers. We have to give the assessments. We have to put our data out there. The contrast is that we have more flexibility to build a program and to add programs to our model. So if we want to add first stage partnership, which we are a first stage partnership that we're partnering with and piloting next year for some of our theater creatives, we can do that without having to go through so much red tape. We can do that for our students. Second, we can grow our team and train our teachers the way we need to train them to meet the model and the mission, specifically to meet the model and mission for our students. So those are things that we have more flexibility over, more autonomy. And then the last is our curriculum, the books we read, the curriculum we pick, the way that we do our academic model. That all comes from the autonomy of being a public charter school.
How do you go about picking your curriculum? Who weighs in, or how does that work?
Yeah, so when we pick our curriculum, we always try to pilot it first with some of our teachers here. So currently, as we're doing now, we're actually thinking about a curriculum for next year that's more hands-on and makes more critical thinking for mathematics for our students that come in sixth grade. We have our assistant principal and a teacher, a math teacher, actually piloting it for the fourth quarter to see what are the pros, what are the cons, what are the benefits. They're doing that solely themselves, so we can see if that will be innovative and will that yield results for our students. So after that, then we roll it out to the rest of the math department, ask students about it, ask parents, and then we try to implement, or we implement that the next year. And that's something that we can do in on the go as a charter school. We can make quick pivots in that sense, that if we wanted to roll out a new curriculum, we would have to wait till next school year. And then it could be bad or good, Kate, right? Mm-hmm. Now we actually have a chance to say, oh, let's try it. Let's align it to our standards still. And then let's see if this will actually be advantageous for all of our students next year.
It sounds like you can pivot much more quickly. If you see a need or you need to address a situation in learning, you can make some quick fixes.
Yes, exactly that, Kate. And that's something that we are proud of being a public charter school, because we can do those things. We can give training around something that is struggling for our students. So when we came back, you know, from the pandemic, one thing that we saw is our students, our high school students especially, were not equipped with cooking, right? And you know, and when I say cooking, because they were DoorDash and everything, Kate, I would tell you when we first came back, kids were trying to DoorDash to the school. And it is like, oh, no, that's what you were doing over the last 2 years. I understand. But we know that, again, we will provide a high quality education and we want every kid to get a 24 or higher on the ACT. Also, we want every student to be able to cook for themselves for the next 7 years so they can also be healthy, you know?
Some practical, yes.
Yeah, and so we actually added that course. Shout out to Ms. Peterson, who was running that course at our high school. And it's been a hit. We are learning things, we're pivoting, we're gonna go full force with it next school year. But again, we were able to do that based off what students said they also wanted to explore at their high school experience.
Rodney Link Jr. with us, CEO of Milwaukee Excellence Charter School. It's a 6th through 12th grade charter formed in 2016. Fielding your questions about charter schools, 800-642-1234. Vincent is joining us in Madison. Hi, Vincent. What is your question?
I got a question on graduation rates for charter schools versus public schools, and then graduation rates for colleges. Like, is there any difference between the charter school graduation rates and the acceptance rate into colleges versus public schools? Because I'm looking to send my kid to, my future kid, I guess, to a charter school over a public school. I just want to know what
those outcomes
entails.
Look like. Yes, Vincent, thank you. And Rodney, I understand, if I'm right, your first high school class will graduate in 2023?
Yes, Kate, that's right. And thank you, Vincent, for joining. I don't know the exact stats for that. I can tell you that our students are on track to graduate 100% of them because of how we build our credits out. Again, this is another thing that's different that we got to set at our school. The state is at 22 credits to graduate from high schools. Currently, we have our set at 24. So, and we give our kids about 7.5 to 8 credits a year. And most of our kids are close to 19 right now. And at the end of the school year, we'll probably be around 22, and they're juniors. The reason why we've done that, now they are taking, we have a lot of juniors now and some sophomores taking classes at MATC as dual enrollment. We have 17 students in a sociology class. And guess what, Kate? They'll be able to take those credits because it's a 200-level class and transfer them to their college that they're going to. So we wanted to be intentional about that as well. And that is something that is also the autonomy that a public charter school can receive when you make decisions of that nature.
So how will your school determine if it is successful? What is that benchmark like for you and your charter school?
Great question, Kate. I would say directly, going back to our vision, we want to be the premier equitable educational experience for our students, providing youth leadership development and enhancing their belief to be creative individuals that can change Milwaukee. When
what?
I say that, oh, I'm sorry,
sure,
I apologize.
Sure. No, there was a pause,
yeah.
Dramatic
there was
pause.
There's the 3 seconds, but what I will say for that is the real goal and what people, and maybe this goes back to Vincent's question as well, we want to be a school that says not just, oh, we got 100% of kids into college, and, you know, we want to say in 5 years, all of our students are making $45,000 to $50,000, because that will give them the financial stability and the personal freedom to make change in their communities, right? There's not a lot of people talking in that way. And I want that to be the conversation, that education is supposed to provide opportunities for students to be prosperous in this nation and in this city. So the real goal is, when we see 5 years out after they graduate from us, what are our students doing now? And what are we doing to also help them in that role post high school?
Do you have that ability to track those students after they graduate for years out?
That is what we are, we are putting our efforts and our strategy into doing that. So we have the ratio of college counselors is one college counselor to 455 students inside, like in the nation. At our organization, we actually have 2 college advisors currently now, and we will have a post-transition college advisor. So that's 3 to our 400 students, right? Mm-hmm. At a full high school before 80. That ratio right there is much lower, and we can focus on that, and that's how we will be doing that. We want to make sure we have a strong alumni network so our kids come back and they talk to the future students. And that's one thing that we're doing to ensure that we do have that. And I think we have to do that. I think it's our responsibility. It's our job to really see, are we making a difference? Not just a difference between, 4 to 18, but when you're 22, I can look at you and say, hey, you did what you wanted to do, and you're in a pretty strong place right now.
Rodney, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Rodney Link Jr. is CEO of Milwaukee Excellence Charter School. And ahead this hour, we meet administrators behind two other charter schools. Have you explored the possibility? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're spending the hour with Wisconsin charter schools here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The State Department of Public Instruction lays it out this way. The Wisconsin charter school law gives charter schools freedom from most state rules and regulations in exchange for greater accountability for results, encouraging more innovation, encouraging parental choice. Do you or your child attend a charter school? How does it differ from traditional public schools? 800-642-1234. Scott Foster is administrator of the Northland Pine School District, operating three charter schools, including a Montessori school and project-based middle and high schools. Scott, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me, Kate, and doing this program.
Well, good morning. Northland Pines, a very rural district covering hundreds of square miles, serving about 1,400 students. Why did the district see a need to create these charter schools?
Basically, we want to continue to offer a high-quality education. We believe every Northland Pines student can do anything they want in the world based on an education here. And having more opportunities and options for students and families, we thought would extend that, and it has proven to be the case.
Well, explore that a little bit more. More options, and in particular, why a Montessori? Why project-based middle and high school?
Sure. We're very proud of what we offer in our what we'd call our traditional schools. There's even choices and options within there, but there is a boundary. There are some boxes that you have to live in. There's less flexibility, so the opportunity to offer a totally different instructional model like Montessori, which is a known proven commodity, but is not seen in a lot of public schools, really gave families that wanted something a little bit different. They wanted some different options within how their student learned. And that really was what drove us to have these for our families.
What is the approach then with these project-based schools? What do you mean by that?
Sure. Many charter schools, as you look around, are based on an instructional practice or how we teach. As mentioned earlier, we're held to the same standards and the same curriculum, but it's how we teach it. And with project-based learning, the students have a lot more voice in their learning. Their day is very different. A lot of the time is flexed. They're more engaged in their learning. We actually call our teachers advisors because they guide and they ask more in-depth questions, and a lot more involvement from the community within that style of learning as well. So it just was a model that we thought would meet more middle schools and high school students.
Do you think that type of learning environment is suitable for all students? And what if a student doesn't work well in a project-based, a project-based situation?
Well, I think that's what makes charter schools so great. They're not for everybody. And it's not even the term charter, it's the style of school. So the great thing in Northland Pines and many of them is the three charter schools are part of our school district. When students can try, and if it doesn't work for them, they have the ability to come back to a more structured middle school or high school where they may find that to be more successful. And it goes both ways. If this isn't working, or they just feel like they could meet their dreams and goals at a higher level, then sometimes the charter school option that we offer is a better fit for them. So it's nice that they all are Northland Pines students and they can try any of our schools.
You mentioned the boxes you live in a traditional public school setting. I want to learn a little bit more about that box, but also what are the challenges and barriers to running a charter school? What do you grapple with?
Well, you know, we are held accountable to the same standards. There's a lot of trust and faith from students and parents that something that maybe they didn't go to school with or their friends don't go to those type of schools. So, for example, when we started Soar Middle School, you know, there was no track record or history. Earlier it was mentioned, a caller asked about, you know, can those students get to college? So, you know, when you don't have a school for 4 years until you get a graduate, you can't say your students are able to be successful in college or the military or the trade. So you need parents and students to kind of build off that trust. You need to have, just like any school, the high quality teachers and paraprofessionals and support staff. All those key components are a big piece of it. So you have to be able to attract that different style of teacher who has to be comfortable with lots of change and being able to pivot at the last moment and creative and think of different ways of doing it and meeting each student's needs. So it's really getting through that first trust factor and knowing that something very different might be uncomfortable for others, but that is what some parents and students thrive on.
We're talking with Scott Foster, administrator of the Northland Pines School District, which operates 3 charter schools. We're learning about them. You can join in on charters. Your questions at 800-642-1234. Do you work at a charter school or does your student attend one? What has that experience been like? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. I want to ask you about what you've learned in running a charter school in the pandemic. What have been your takeaways?
I think the strengths of charter schools and many of them, and I've been fortunate to tour many when we were looking to start ours, and it's a great network and it's kind of a family atmosphere between all the charter schools. They really want to help each other. But when you go, there's really a family atmosphere when you walk in. And I think that social emotional need that's been so challenging for students throughout the pandemic has been a strength of our charter schools. Kids, they're known to be flexible learners. So as other students have had to adapt with some virtual and hybrid learning, that was kind of natural for our students in the charter school. The things they were able to do at home when we were forced to do that, they believe in learning takes place outside of the school walls sometimes. So that was a little more natural for them.
But did you have to deal with broadband issues? You're in a rural area. Yeah. Do all of your kids have internet?
They do not all have internet. So that's that adaptive piece that we deal with day in and day out. We do virtual snow days in our district. When SOAR Charter School is created, and it's still to this day, we only meet face-to-face with our students 4 days a week. And on Fridays, they're supposed to be out learning hands-on or doing their community service or working from home. And if they don't have broadband, you know, that has been a challenge because some of their curriculum is virtual and online. So we have to do that for all of our students in our traditional school and in our charter school. So it's getting a little better, but it is a constant challenge during the pandemic. And even before that, it's been a challenge.
One other thing I'm curious about is transportation in a rural area. How does that work with the charter school in getting students to school?
Sure. We are blessed to live in an amazing area with a lot of natural resources. And so we take advantage of that in our charter school. So we have 2 physical buildings that are outside of our Eagle River campus where we host our charter schools and a couple other elementary schools. We do bus our students. All of our students in the district are bused. And then we also run a bus so that the students that come to Eagle River ride a bus and we transport them out to Land O'Lakes and St. Germain where our two of our 3 charter schools are physically located. So that is a commitment. It did cost a little bit more at first and still to this day has some cost, but it is a commitment that we made. And if we're going to have these options, the school district has to make some commitments. And that was one of them that we made, is that transportation wouldn't be a barrier for students and family that wanted this option.
Mary in Milwaukee called in and couldn't stay. And Mary is wondering about what discretion charter schools have on not enrolling certain students or who might, not fit into the charter school. Perhaps they have lower test scores. Wondering what discretion do charters have in choosing their students?
We do hold ourselves. We are a public charter school, so we have to enroll everybody. As mentioned earlier by Sarah, we do have special ed teachers, and we do look at our demographics. We want them to mirror our current community. We don't want it to be one or the other. So we do, all of our schools have a lottery. Currently, we have more students that want to attend than we can accept, because, you know, there is limits to size and spacing. So we do an open lottery. The only condition that we have prior to the lottery is siblings do get preference to get in. So if your brother or sister's already in the school, that gets you a spot in. But otherwise, it's a lottery. We held our lottery a couple weeks ago, and all students, no matter who you are, can enter into that lottery.
Have you had to work this enrollment this way for a while? How long have you been having to hold a lottery to because, you know, you have more people to enroll who want to be there?
Since they've opened, our high school does not need a lottery. We have more space and capacity there, but our middle school and our Montessori both have had a lottery every year they've been open.
Do you have plans to expand at all the charter options?
We've had those discussions internally. As mentioned earlier, when you ask about barriers, there is some barriers with cost and staffing and space. So also, we've always wanted to hold these at very high standards. We, as a district, we hold ourselves to very high standards, and with these charter schools, we did expand Soar Middle School once, and it made it more challenging to do some of those great things you do out in the field with field studies and trips out into the nature and all those. So the bigger your group gets, sometimes it gets a little more challenging. So we're always looking at that balance of providing a really great experience with how many students we can take and do that.
Do you have enough teachers? I mean, looking at that staffing component there, and you mentioned bigger groups, is that a challenge there? Do you have enough teachers?
We currently do have enough teachers. They do take specialized training though, so that is a challenge. So if we would lose a Montessori teacher, that there is a much more limited pool, or you have to get somebody trained, which is another expense and time. So there are challenges with staffing. Thankfully, we have an amazing group of teachers in all three of our charter schools. Some of those started in our district and made that move to the charter schools, and others we've hired from outside, and they've been great additions and bring new ideas, or maybe even from another charter school, they came to our charter school. So it is a challenge, and we're blessed so far to have the staff we do have currently.
Scott, thank you for joining us.
Well, we really appreciate it, and thank you for highlighting this great opportunity for Wisconsin students.
Scott Foster is administrator of the Northland Pines School District, operates three charter schools. Still ahead, it's a look at virtual charter schools, which expanded in the pandemic. We talk with the leader of eSucceed. It's a consortium of seven school districts. Still time to join in on your experience with charter schools. Your questions, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. There are 58 virtual charter schools operating in Wisconsin. That's up 6 from the previous year, according to the State Department of Public Instruction. Did you switch to a virtual charter for your student in the pandemic? How do you describe the learning environment? What are charter school strengths and weaknesses? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Michelle Anderfer is director of eSucceed. It's a K-12 virtual school in a consortium of seven school districts: Bruce, Cadott, Cornell, Gilman, Lake Holcomb, New Auburn, and Stanley Boyd. Michelle, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Well, when we think about virtual schools, I mean, you know, our thoughts go to the pandemic. How did eSucceed do in these times of schooling remotely?
Yeah, quite a learning experience for everybody who had to go remote, for sure. eSucceed is in its third year of operation, and our first year in the 2019-20 school year, we were a 9-12 school. And then, of course, the pandemic hit, and then our community, our consortium members really were interested in us expanding to K-12 just, you know, because of the pandemic. And so we did that. So we, in 2021, we opened up as a K-12 school, we expanded, and then included our elementary program as well.
Did you have enough teachers to be able to do that expanding?
Yes, we had to look for additional teachers, and we went from our first year, you know, just being new. I think we had 18 full-time students. We were very small, and then we had like 120 part-time because we had a lot of students at the 9-12 level that just wanted to check out what virtual was all about. And so they were just taking some part-time classes through us. And then the year of the pandemic, we went up to 200. So with that, it was, you know, getting new office staff in, you know, for enrollment purposes, you know, hiring new teachers, you know, it was just building those processes from the ground up as a new school.
What need is eSucceed? What you know, niche is it filling? And what is it? How did it, you know, what are you trying to address here?
Yeah, so eSucceed was developed. The idea came from 10 superintendents in the area, and the focus was really on providing rural schools opportunities that maybe they wouldn't have being rural. And so figuring a virtual opportunity would be able to provide courses and classes and experiences that maybe they would not be able to achieve in a rural environment. So that's how it was. That was the, you know, the intent. And we do provide a lot of a variety of different courses, especially for our high school kids. We also wanted to provide move more toward project-based learning rather than the traditional learning. However, we did learn through the pandemic, you know, that there are so many different needs out there and so many different students that learn in different ways. And so our shift focused a little bit the past couple of years to providing more customized experiences for students. So we have students that are currently, you know, in the high school level that are taking, you know, more of the traditional classes like a, you know, a geometry or an algebra, but yet because they have interest in possibly marketing or business in the future, they're developing a project as well. So they've got some traditional classes and then they're working on like an elective project as well. So that gives them an experience in both areas.
I wonder, you know, how much discretion do students have to pick and choose their courses as they progress through the grades?
You know, that is something that we continually expand on every year. We are currently this year, we're giving our middle school students a taste of what project-based learning is to see if it's something that really resonates with them and if that's something they want to continue. So we have them for their English and for their social studies, doing more project-based and then more traditional classes for their science and their math classes. And then for our high school students, they're the ones that, you know, we pushed out this past semester about if they wanted to design their own elective courses. And so we have 5 students right now that are in the middle of elective projects. And one of them is that I've been overseeing is a student who is very interested in business. And so she's looking at marketing techniques to increase enrollment in a local business.
That's a lot to keep track of. Each student's personal growth and each student's, you know, personal journey through the learning process of each grade.
Yeah. And we, you know, we have what we call ILPs, which are individual learning plans. And this year, you know, we implemented them more at the middle school level because, you know, they are doing more project-based in social studies and English. But that's something we continually want to expand because we know that students, if they're, you know, if it's something that really interests them and they're engaged in their learning, you know, we can bring the standards in, you know, and mm-hmm. make sure that all those standards are being covered.
Michelle Anderfer is director of eSucceed K-12 Virtual Charter School in a consortium of 7 school districts. You can join in 800-642-1234. Danelle is with us from Stoughton. Danelle, hi. What is on your mind?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering, from listening to the last interviewee about the lotteries and seeing that there's a lot of interest for the flexibility that charter schools can provide in terms of curriculum and project-based learning and different curriculum models. How are public schools responding to this increased interest? And are we starting to see public schools incorporating some of what charter schools are doing?
That's a great question. Michelle, go ahead.
Because we are part of a consortium, we are connected to a lot of the districts, and our office is actually in our authorizing district, which is Gilman. And one of the things that we have seen is our teachers, you know, our virtual teachers have had some partnerships with the Gilman staff as well. And, you know, just developing, you know, whether it's, project-based units or things like that. And then the E6C teacher can teach it virtually. The Gilman teacher can teach it face to face. And then our vision is for this coming year is to have those groups of kids actually meet, you know, actually have a time where they can connect. So I do think that, you know, I mean, we have the ability to really look at innovative practices and really try some new things. And again, we're held to the same standards. You know, we're preparing right now for state testing as well. But we just kind of have that mindset that we really want to try to incorporate as much as we can to engage students and customize the learning experience for them.
You know, rural areas have had a real difficult time with broadband. How have you been getting around internet access?
Yeah, the pandemic actually, you know, is helping virtual schools because, you know, they're moving a lot faster and putting broadband in rural areas. However, we do provide all of our students that don't have internet services, we do provide hotspots for them and jetpacks for them. And so if, you know, that's part of the onboarding process. If a student needs, you know, we provide computers or Chromebooks based upon the grade level. And then we also provide hotspots for them if they don't have internet access.
We have just about a minute left, but I'm wondering, you know, building on what Danelle said, do you think there is a healthy competition then between charter schools and traditional public high schools or public schools in general?
You know, my opinion is I think that there's a place for every school. You know, I mean, we all reach a certain different populations of students. And, you know, we've had students come to us virtually where, you know, maybe virtually is just not their niche and they need to go, you know, look at more of a face-to-face situation. But I think that, you know, every school is doing a great job, you know, in what they have and the students that they're working with. And just to have the mindset of providing opportunities so that every student can be successful. And it might be in a brick and mortar school, it might be in a virtual environment, it might be project-based, it might be traditional, but you know, every student can then choose, you know, what is the best way that they can learn and be engaged in their learning.
Michelle, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us and thank you for having this topic.
Michelle Andorfer is director of eSucceed. It's a K-12 virtual charter in a consortium, as we talked about, 7 school districts. Earlier, we talked with Sarah Hackett, director of the Wisconsin Resource Center for Charter Schools, Rodney Link, CEO of Milwaukee Excellence, and Scott Foster, the administrator of Northland Pines School District. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.